Shame of Philadelphia Radio, the time filler on WPHT. Yes, live Sterling every damn night.
Now we have 1210 WPHT weather. It's Pride Month. Well, that's why I played that. It's like a pride song. It's a pride theme.
Cool, enjoy being a guy, having a girl like me.
Was that big enough for you? The pride flag, was that big enough for you? Listen, this is more important. Free parking at SEPTA regional rail lots is slated to end. It's slated to end. The free parking that they put at the regional lots, that's slated to end at the SEPTA trains. For more than 4 years, parking has been free at SEPTA regional hall surface lots and the Frankfurt Transportation Center, Norristown, and Lansdale garages. That is slated to change sometime next fiscal year, which starts July 1st. The city's fiscal year starts July 1st. Why should it start January 1st? During budget hearings, SEPTA officials said the agency was looking to raise daily rate for surface lots from $2 up to from $1 and the garages to $4. From $2, agency spokesperson Andrew Bush said today that SEPTA understands adding a fee back could impact riders, but they hope riders see public transit as an overall value. Well, there are a number of issues here that we need to discuss. It's Pride Month. During budget hearings, SEPTA officials said the agency was looking to raise the daily rate for surface lots from to $2 from $1. It was miserably written. And the garages to $4 from $2. Agency spokesperson Andrew Bush said today that SEPTA understands how adding a fee back could impact riders, but they hope riders see public transit as an overall value. Public transit is an overall value if it doesn't smell like urine. If I don't get the same sensation from public transit that I get from emptying the cat's box. Raising it from $1 to $2 or from $3 to $4, I don't think that solves anything. Just a hunch. And can you imagine? Let's just think a second. You go to Temple, you take communications, and you decide, you know, I'm going to be in communications. And you go to Fox 29, Odyssey at 2400 Market Street, which is this the housing of this great radio station. And you hit all the places in media that you want to work. You make a nice looking CV, you did some extracurricular in college. And you're very anxious to get out there and be in media. And then you realize that your best shot is to be the agency spokesperson for SEPTA, Andrew Bush. He says he understands how adding a fee back could impact riders, but they hope riders see public transit as an overall value. We don't see it as an overall value. Public transit here smells like urine, and it is far less safe ever since the police chief of SEPTA, Thomas Nestel, the great Thomas Nestel, Johnny Donuts, Tommy Donuts, was no longer the police chief of SEPTA. It was almost safe then. But can you imagine your life is to be the public relations spokesperson for SEPTA? Any flashy shows? Anything sexy going on? Anything brand new? Thrilling? No, you got this. You get to announce that SEPTA riders can now pay more for surface parking and garage parking for the privilege of getting on a train that smells like urine. There's been for years in Pennsylvania and Jersey, for years, there's been this big push, take public transportation, take the train, do what you want to do, take the train. Well, there are two very big problems. And this is the part nobody talks about. The number of people who can take a train is determined by how many parking spaces there are. Because in the 50s and the 40s, when these systems were set up, the family had one car. And mom drove dad to the train station. Mom was driving dad to the train station. They didn't really need a parking space.
Our first house nearly never got built. My wife was so bent on helping the builder. Woman, I said, leave that poor man alone and make us some coffee. Not that kind you've been buying either. Instant Maxwell House coffee. Red jar, good to the last drop. Maxwell House. The instant that tastes like coffee. Be a good little Maxwell House wife, and we'll be happy here for a long time. Maxwell House coffee. Instant and ground.
And she would drive dad to the train station, and then she would go home and bone the repairman. But he didn't know because he didn't come home for another 8 or 9 hours. And then she'd go back to the train station and pick dad up. They didn't need all the parking spaces. But now that every family is a two-income family, every family is a two-car family or three or four, everybody drives themselves to the train station, which is why they're fat. They don't walk to the train station anymore. And they need a parking space. The number of people who can take the train is 100% determined by how many parking spaces there are. And in many smaller communities, it is impossible to get a parking space. In many smaller communities, the local municipality makes it very expensive to get a parking space, and they're heavily reserved. So you can romance all you want about public transportation and the beauty of public transportation and how great trains are and how they're going to save the environment. Everybody get on a train. You have to be able to park your car. And every hour, that is a progressively difficult situation. And therefore, to raise it by a buck or two, the surface parking or the garage parking in Philadelphia for the SEPTA train, that's petty. Don't do it. Don't do it. It isn't about maintaining. And then they justify the rate increase. Yes, we need to maintain the train. We need to maintain the train. That's why we need the money. That money isn't going to get anywhere near repairing the train. I promise you a year from now, it's still going to smell like urine. Those wheels are going to squeal like crazy because they haven't been greased properly. Guaranteed. Nothing's going to improve. Where's the bar car in the trains? Am I that old? The bar car? You're kidding me. No, there used to be smokers and bar cars, which made it barely tolerable for the hour and 8 minute ride home so that your wife, who's been boning all day, could pick you up at the train station.
Our first house nearly never got built. My wife was so bent on helping the builder. Woman, I said, leave that poor man alone and make us some coffee. Not that kind you've been buying either. Instant Maxwell House coffee. Red jar, good to the last drop. Maxwell House. The instant that tastes like coffee. Be a good little Maxwell House wife, and we'll be happy here for a long time.
Maxwell House coffee. Instant and ground.
Feeling it? Are you feeling it? Yes, Sterling, every damn night.
Sterling every night, inspired by Larry David.
None of your business. How about that?
Sterling every night. Let's see if in space. Who wears sports blast?
I wanted to do something special for our a special day?
Oh, anniversary!
Yeah! Happy anniversary, oh, babe.
Thank you, honey. Mm.
It's 9:21 in Philadelphia. It means I have to sit up now and do a show. I'm looking at Facebook, the Jurassic social media, and there's a group called Talking About Radio. And somebody posted, "Hi, is there anyone that has insight on how to get into the radio biz? I am trying to learn how to be better at doing a talk show. Something I've never heard at this station. I currently do one, but I won't advertise it here. Just wanted one or two things. Help getting into radio and or help and guidance on being a better presenter. Any and all help would be appreciated." And the first person wrote, and it's actually someone I know, wrote, "Get into sales." Okay. You're interested in getting into radio? You're interested in doing it on the air? All right, here's the deal. Everybody I know who's on the air is doing it as a calling, like a priest with about as much sex and money. And it is people on the air in radio have no choice. They decided when they were 14 or 15, oh my God, I have to get into radio. I have to be on the air. They'd listen to their favorite disc jockeys. They try to imitate them. And every one of them was guilty of practicing radio in their bedrooms. They made up commercial logs, made all sorts of things to look like a microphone, a headphone. My dad worked at Bell Laboratories, and I knew they had those headpieces for operators and all sorts of audio equipment. I begged him to bring me home stuff like that, and he would. And he made cool little things for me that lit up. I could push a toggle switch, and it lit up. But the point is that the people who work on the air had no choice. I know of almost none of them that did it as a second career. Almost none. The other thing is that there's a myth. For years I've heard this myth. Well, what happened to the farm team? What happened to the farm team? There never was a farm team. What there used to be were people who'd come to the radio station on the weekends and hang out. High school kids, college kids would come to the radio station and hang out. Thanks to the dumbest law in the history of man, Sarbanes-Oxley. Well, it's really hard to get into a building to hang out. Gary Arnell, who's on WPHT from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Saturdays, he doesn't have a building pass. He has to go through the humiliation of a control board operator buzzing him in, going downstairs to let Gary in. Like, why the hell doesn't he have a building pass? What's wrong with you? He doesn't have a building pass. If he doesn't have a building pass to go on the air on WPHT, this station, if he doesn't have one, you're not going to just get into the radio station and wander around. That's the big challenge. I'd say 90% of us on the radio, we hung around a station closest to our home, tortured our parents to drive us there and pick us up on the weekend and drive us home. And it could be 5 miles, it could be 50 miles. It didn't matter. That's what we had to do. That was our recreation and our education. I used to imagine in high school, when I was miserable at gym, I could not climb up to the top of the rope. I was never picked for a team. No, I wasn't picked up last for a team in gym. The gym teacher used to finally, when everybody else was called on, point to me and then point to the team that I was supposed to be on. I used to fantasize that there was a sport called radio, where you had to sit in front of a control board, cue up songs, get the next element ready, and pretend you were on the radio. And then you were judged by how precise and fast you were. I would have won that. I would have gotten an A in that sport. No sweat. That was it. It's true of every radio loser. I used to say, it's an industry of C students with no prom stories. Did you go to the prom? No, I hung out at the transmitter that night. I got to see the transmitter that night. No, the chief engineer let me see the transmitter that night. Those are the people in radio. No social skills. Lord knows, no ability to dress. Everybody I know in radio thinks Sansa belt pants are stylish. Popcorn knit they think it's stylish. I mention all this because later this week I'm going to go to a talk radio conference. I'm on a panel because they think I know stuff. After many years of going to this particular conference, by now you think they would know better. But my challenge is that it is logistically really hard for me to get there and get to a facility from which I can do this show from 9 to midnight on 1210 WPHT. It's a challenge. I believe that I'm going to have a guest star on Thursday and Friday nights. Now, I know, please, no crying, please. From 9 to midnight on Thursday and Friday. I'll be on Sunday. Oh, thank God. Because somebody has to do 6 days a week, and somebody has to be on legal holidays besides me and Dom Giordano. You know, Dom and I both worked Memorial Day. We were here alone. I didn't see anybody else here Memorial Day. Yet I viewed it as a crucial broadcast day because of the near riots at the Jersey Shore. And it's all about local. All about local. But to conclude, the fact is that SEPTA is just being cheap and stupid and short-sighted to increase the parking rate on the parking lots and the parking garages in the regional stations. It's a mistake. If you're going to raise the rate, SEPTA, don't raise it by a dollar. Raise it by 10. And then you can say it's going to this specific project. I don't know, $1 to $2 sounds just like a slushy fund to me. My opinion, who knows? What are you going to do? You're not going to fix anything with that. You're not going to repair anything with that. That's going to be a slushy fund. It's going to be a little, you know, extra. If you want to raise the rates, then pledge to build more parking spaces. You're not going to fix the fleet with a couple of bucks. You're not going to get rid of the urine smell with a couple of bucks. You're not going to do what you should do, which is rehire Thomas Nestel. That's what you should do to be the chief of SEPTA. It's a really hard job to be in a SEPTA cop. That's a hard job. And I have nothing but respect for them. But I really like Thomas Nestel. Tommy Donuts. When they'd arrest people, he'd give them sugar donuts. I don't know why, but it made him kind of a cool guy. That's what he did. But I'm not appalled at the increase in the parking garage rate at the SEPTA regional lots. I'm not appalled by it. I'm disappointed. Either don't do it and be magnanimous and say, we're going to support our commuters. That's how you promote commuting. You say, we're never raising those rates. In fact, we're taking them down. You're only charging a dollar or two now. It's not enough. Take it down. Or do it right and make it 10 bucks. And then say, and it's going to go to fix this. It's going to go to more parking spaces. And, oh, gee, here's the steamroller now, right now at this regional station, to pour the concrete and pour the asphalt. And we're starting today to build more parking spaces. That's what needs to happen. But don't do this little, oh, we're only going to do like a buck or two. And that's I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Night, inspired by bad TikToks.
You both want my number.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm not a homewrecker.
We don't live together.
It's an open relationship.
Also, Patrick has a girlfriend.
I do not. Hey, come hang out with us later. They put you up at the hotel in Flushing, right? We're in room 206.
Want me to come tuck you in?
No. We just keep talking about tennis.
Good night.
Sterling Every Damn Night. Walter M. Sterling on 1210 WPHT in Philadelphia. It's live, and I want to talk to you at 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. See if what I'm about to say relates to you in any way. I've never said this on the air before. I've never revealed this on the air before, even though I have been on WPHT for 10 sacred years. 10 years where American broadcasters, talk show hosts from around the country, get wind that I'm, they have a lot of wind that are wind, there's wind involved, hear me, and they say, he's on, how the hell did he get a show on that station? Because you see in the panacea, in the stadium of talk radio stations, this is one of those stations. 1210 WPHT. Definitely one of those stations. And tonight we're celebrating Pride Month.
Cool, enjoy being a guy, having a girl like me.
Mr. Fauci testified today in Congress, and I don't care about what he said, and I don't care what they said back. I could. All the academics who host talk shows on other stations, all the academics can talk about what he said and she said, and the dates don't match up. But no, no, let me tell you, I got these vaccines. I was sick as hell. I got these vaccines, and for the first or second one, I don't remember, for 48 hours, I couldn't move. I couldn't get out of bed. I wasn't really sure where I was. And I lost track of time. And as a professional broadcaster, to lose track of time is critical. I had no idea of where I was. It was horrible. And I got every, no, it was weird. In a 48, 72 hour period, I got every known symptom of Parkinson's. I don't have Parkinson's, but I had every known symptom of Parkinson's for about 72 hours. It was scary and weird. And I don't know how many of the vaccines I got. I don't know if I got two or three of them. But I do know that for about 18 months, my three public school children were screwed. I have a 12-year-old, and she was, you know, 9, 10. She was just learning to read, just learning to speak. And she has challenges. The kid has challenges. To take her from an in-classroom session, one-on-ones with a special ed teacher, to a Zoom call, that wasn't going to be happening. Then, and this killed me, I had a kid in high school. She's 16. And she decided for her junior year that she was going to ace it. Unlike her father and mother, she's gifted. She's super smart. And all she has to do is say, I'm going to ace it. And she will. I would have to study till 2 in the morning and get a lot of help and have 4 tutors, but she could ace it. And she decided to do that, and she did. At the beginning of her junior year, she was acing it. And as you know, that in theory is the most important year for college admissions. Well, when the pandemic came and they shut the schools and put them on Zoom calls, she went from all A's to D's and F's almost immediately. She could not learn on Zoom. Just didn't have the ability. She had something called ADHD, which to me is a lot of nonsense. There are a lot of other mental issues and behavioral issues that I'm not going to say it's a lot of nonsense. But if my mother, my Jersey mother, heard about ADHD, you know what she would say? She would say, stop eating sugar. Don't eat that junk. Go to bed earlier. That's what she would say. Do I have to repeat it? She would say, stop eating sugar. Don't eat that junk. Go to bed earlier. Pride at WPHT. I was incredibly sick both times because of that vaccine. Then a couple months later, and this is what I've never talked about before, a weirder thing happened. I had a lot of neurological problems all of a sudden. My hands would shake, and I remember walking up a very, very insignificant incline, like for a driveway. And I couldn't do it. And I felt like something was pushing me from behind. There was nothing there. And once I fell over, I went up a 6-inch step and fell over flat on my face. Flat on my face. And then I couldn't get up. Over and over, there were symptoms like this. The hardest thing for me to do in the morning was to figure out how to get out of bed and how to climb up the stairs. But the inclines were the toughest one, the slightest incline. That was really hard. And I went to the hotshot neurologist at the hotshot hospital, and then another hotshot neurologist at another hotshot hospital, and he said, "You have Parkinson's." And I'm like, "Well, why am I not like Michael J. Fox?" He said, "Because Michael J. Fox got it too young." It turns out Parkinson's progresses pretty much at the same rate for everyone, but usually most people get Parkinson's in their 60s, and by the time it progresses to wheelchair incapacitation, they're going to pass away. They're 80, 85. People do not die from Parkinson's. They die with Parkinson's. It is not a fatal disease. It's an endlessly debilitating disease. Well, that was my good news. I had a kid in college, another one going to college. I had a 12-year-old. That was the kind of news you want, right? One day, I'm reading this article, and I was taking the medicine. They gave me medicine for it. It seemed to be working. I was going to rehab, and it didn't affect my voice, so I could continue to do a radio show, and nobody knew about it. And I do it from my laundry room, so nobody knew about it. One day, I'm reading this article, and I'm like, oh, my God. It explains something about causes of Parkinson's that was unbelievable, and I will share that with you coming up in just seconds. It's an amazing story. In just seconds, this is Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Night, inspired by Mira Salma.
Since we both like sleep, why don't we just sleep together? Since we both like sleep, why don't we just sleep together?
My phone number is live and available for you. The number is 855-839-1210. In Philadelphia, Market Street, 855-839-1210. It's 9:48 in Philadelphia on a spectacular night. You and I get to spend time together. It's a local live radio show. Those things don't exist. No, most shows come from satellites very far away. Very strange satellites very far away. All right. I was sharing with you a story that I've never told before, which is that right after I got the COVID shots, I started to develop the symptoms of Parkinson's. I fell down on my nose just by walking one step. I walked up one 6-inch step, back step, a known step, fell down smack on my face, and had tremendous problems getting out of bed, negotiating the driveway, negotiating ramps. I live, I don't know, what is it, 3 blocks from my kid's elementary school. There was no way I could walk her to school. There's no way. Once I'd walk her there, I'd had to sit on a bench and rest for a very long time. Well, all of this was scary because I have a 12-year-old daughter, and at the time I had a 16-year-old daughter, and I had a 18-year-old daughter. And they depend on dad, and I'm a dad. I'm a father. My pronouns are sir and father. Sir and father. I'm not a baby daddy. Are you a baby daddy? No, I show up. I know where my kids are. My kids know where dad is, and they know what's expected of them. Do they do it all the time? No, 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 no. I told you they're daughters. But we have what I like to think is a good relationship. I don't think any parent can judge that. I think only the children and psychiatrists can judge that. All right, so now I have all the symptoms of Parkinson's. I go to the doctor, and then I go to another one. I go to 2 hotshot neurologists, and you know what? Both of them said, "You have Parkinson's." And they put me on L-DOPA, and I go to rehab, a physical rehab, and I start doing rehab things for Parkinson's, and I take the medicine. But again, what I learned about Parkinson's, that you might know, is that you don't start out like Michael J. Fox. Michael J. Fox tragically got it very, very young. It always progresses to the point he's at, but sadly, most people who have it get it in their 60s, and they die before it gets to the terrible shape that Michael J. Fox is living in today. That's why you don't see more of that. It's because it progresses slowly over time, and most people pass away before it gets to the Michael J. Fox stage. It's too bad. All right. Now I'm reading an article. And the headline of the article, I don't know why I actually read it, but boy, if there's a helper, this is why. This is the proof. The headline of the article is pharmaceutically induced Parkinson's. I'm like, what? Pharmaceutically induced Parkinson's. And I read it, and there are a very short list of medications, prescription medications, that can generate the symptoms of Parkinson's without actually having the disease. It's called Parkinsonism. It is all the symptoms, but you don't have the disease. Now I go back to the hotshot neurologist and I say, I have been taking this medication for years. For years I have taken this medication. And they're looking at the medication. They're looking at me. They're looking at the fact that I have every symptom there is. Well, we really need to... The only way to tell for sure is if we do a brain scan. What? If to do a brain scan. Now, the good news is that's not a science fiction test. It's nothing scary. It's not in an MRI. It's as calm and peaceful and non-invasive as could be. They take a picture of my brain, and they, rather than calling me or chatting with me, I get a freaking voicemail. God love American medicine. I get a freaking voicemail. And the voicemail says, Mr. Sterling, you don't have Parkinson's. Your brain is perfectly normal. It must be a side effect of that medication. And after I stopped taking the medication, I have no symptoms of Parkinson's. I have no symptoms of Parkinsonism. But for 18 months, I thought I had. What I'd like to know is, what is that? Why am I hearing that? Stop it. Why am I hearing that? Oh, wait a second. Well, there's a surefire way to end a story. Oh, my gosh. So I don't have Parkinson's. And I don't have Parkinsonism. I stopped taking the medication. Just like it said in the article, when people stop taking the medication, the symptoms go away. And you stop at half, the half of them go away, you stop all of it, or they all go away. It's all gone. I don't have it. I have no Parkinson's, and I have no Parkinsonism. I said to my daughter's lawyer, my daughter was in a car crash where she was the passenger, and not at fault. And we got a hotshot liability lawyer. And I called him up. I said, look, I was told by this hospital, this big shot hospital system, that I have Parkinson's, and they misdiagnosed it. And for 18 months, my family and I lived with that horror. We lived with that. Can I sue them for misdiagnosis? Can I sue them for malpractice? He doesn't think so. I'm like, why doesn't he think so? What could be more clear-cut than that? And I think he doesn't think so because it's not as clear-cut as a car accident. It's 9:54 with Walter M. Sterling. My phone number is 855-839-1210. I've just shared with you the horrors of the COVID vaccine. I had terrible side effects. I'm not at all sure that it did anything. I had COVID twice after it, after getting the vaccines. It was like a mild cold. Yes, I know I was very lucky, but then I had long COVID. And I won't bore you with that story. But the end of that story is that for months, everything I ate tasted like garbage, tasted like rotting garbage in July in a garbage dump. That's what it tasted like. That's what it did for me. I could only eat three things: oranges, unadulterated meat. I could have a steak, but nothing on it. No, I mean nothing. No salt, nothing. And it was weird. I could drink black coffee and I could drink whole milk, but I couldn't drink coffee with milk. Explain that to me. And explain this to me.
Hello, young folks. What you shaking? I gotta try that scene you're making. Liver on jeans turning on. Doodly-doo-doo, feeling groovy.
Celebrating Pride Month at Sterling every night.
Hello, young folks. what you shaking? I gotta try that scene you're making. Liberace's turning on. Doodly doo doo, feeling groovy.
No, that's not bumper music. I don't play bumper music. That is the dumbest thing. Why would anybody make commercial breaks longer? Why would they do that? Yeah, let's play some bumper music, and then we'll be like cutting edge and cool. No, none of the, and inevitably, they play music from the last century. How's that going to make you cutting edge and cool? Snap out of it. The way you be cutting edge and cool is you listen to Haim. That's what you do. You listen to Haim. That's it. That's all you have to do. My number is 855-839-1210.
What you shaking? I gotta try that scene you're making. Liberace's turning on. Doodly doo doo, feeling groovy.
Speaking of lesbianism, have you seen that great new show starring Jeannie Smart on HBO Max called Hacks? Have you seen Hacks? In the second episode of Hacks, the reason to see it, besides the fact that it's very funny, and Lorraine Newman's daughter is the co-star. Yeah, the girl who plays her writer, plays Jeannie Smart's writer, that's Lorraine Newman's daughter. Well, she's out as a bisexual. And in the show, there's a completely gratuitous, unnecessary scene that must be seen of Lorraine Newman's daughter committing lesbianism with an equally beautiful girl in the shower. This is not to be missed. That's how you are to celebrate Pride Month, Sterling, every night.
Now, the shame of Philadelphia radio, the time filler on WPHT, yes, live Sterling every damn night.
Hello, young folks. What you shaking? I gotta try that scene you're making. Liberace's turning on. Doodly doo doo, feeling groovy.
Liberace is turning on. Welcome to Pride Month, Walter M. Sterling. I hope that was big enough for you, that flag this weekend, that flag. Walter M. Sterling every damn night. Just imagine that hell. It's a train wreck, I'll tell you. It's a SEPTA train wreck. 1210 WPHT, Walter Sterling. Now, I heard that nonsense about 2,500 or 25,000 migrants crossing the border without paper, without qualifications, without anything. You understand that when you hear these phony baloney celebrities saying, well, you know, Bruce saying if Trump's elected, I'm moving to Australia. What exactly would that solve? It would only prove that you were born to run. It would only prove that you are lying about celebrating being born in the USA. That's all that would do. It wouldn't do anything. But it also works on this very arrogant assumption that Australians want you. It works on this crazy assumption that another country wants you. I looked. I said, well, what does it take to become a citizen of Australia? Well, you ready? You need to have a document that proves your birth name, date of birth, and gender, a photograph, a signature, current residential address. You need to provide a full birth certificate that shows your parents' names. If you cannot give us a birth certificate, provide a family or household registration document or any other collection of documents issued to you prior to your arrival in Australia. Then collectively confirm your identity from birth. Documents showing evidence of a change of name include an official non-commemorative marriage or divorce certificate. You can't just show something pretty you hang on the wall. You have to show the real certificate. Change of name documents from an Australian registry of births, deaths, and marriages, or the relevant overseas authority. Examples of documents they also need is an Australian driver's license, pages from your passport, national identity card, air crew identity document, and then other things depending on how you got here. Evidence of residential address. You have to prove that you're a resident of Australia before you can become a citizen of Australia. Well, how do you do that? You have to provide an electric, gas, or water bill. Bruce, are you listening? You got this? Examples of electricity, gas, or water bill, a rates notice, rental contract, bank statement. You also have to prove that you arrived in Australia. How do you do that? A current or previous passport, travel document, proof of entry passenger list from the National Archives of Australia. It's pretty detailed. And it's true of every country. The other countries have equally draconian rules. My favorite is if you want to move to Qatar, you have to prove that you've lived there for 20 years. You have to have residence for 20 years. You can't have moved out for more than 6 months at a time. You have to prove where you went for those 6 months. You cannot have participated in any revolutionary activity in Qatar. And remember, I said 20 years. And you have to be able to prove that you are fluent in the native language. Bruce, you're not going to move to Australia. Canada is no better. You got to have a residency there for 3 years, pay taxes for 3 years, not be late on your taxes, and demonstrate fluency in either English or French. Wouldn't it be amazing if people coming into the United States of America had to prove fluency in English? Wouldn't that be spectacular? We're one of the few countries in the world without an official language. And I will never forget the stories from my grandmother, my mother's mother, who moved here from Germany when she was a teenager. She would not leave her apartment where she was staying until she lost her accent. My grandmother, who was born in Germany, moved here at 16, had no accent. You would never know where she was born. She would not leave her apartment until she did. And she would not leave her apartment until she was registered in nursing school and had at least two sources of income. And her job, as was all of the people who came here with her at the time, was assimilation. That was it. And I'll never forget. This is so weird. She was so determined to be fully assimilated. Now that she's my grandmother and she's in her 60s or 70s, I'll never forget. I said to her once, hey, could you read what this page says? And it was the page of a Mercedes manual in German. And I showed it to her. She says, I can't read that. I don't remember one word of that. She remembered it just fine. There was no way that she was going to admit that she could speak German because she was an American. I'm American. I'm an American citizen, and that's it. There was no further conversation. It's fascinating. Why is my computer spitting at us? Well, we'll fix that during the break, won't we? Now, you've heard all this nonsense about TikTok and its great threat to democracy, TikTok. I don't understand the mechanics of it. If the Chinese are interested in monitoring the tens of millions of Americans who use TikTok, what are they going to do with that information? What are you going to do if I watch a stupid video? I went to TikTok and I looked at what are the most popular videos. What is it that the Chinese will learn about us? Oh, gee, here's a really popular TikTok song.
We're guys. We keep a little dirt under my pillow for the birdman. In case he comes to town.
What?
Keep a little dirt under my pillow for the birdman. So he won't take me down to his lair deep under the mountain.
What are you talking about?
Underground. That's where he keeps his dirt.
1014 in Philadelphia at 1210 WPHT with Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night, inspired by a proud butcher.
There's over $10 million in beef in here. The best steaks in the country.
Sterling every night. Let me entertain.
First order of business. How old are you?
I'm about to turn 30 next.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to stop you right there. I'm kind of the Leonardo DiCaprio of lesbians. I get older, they stay 22.
Well,
saved by the bell. Well, best of luck to you.
Pillow for the birdman, in case he comes to town. What? Keep a little dirt under my pillow for the birdman, so he won't take me down to his lair deep under the mountain.
What are you talking about?
Underground, that's where he keeps his dirt.
If you tell another girl she smells good, that's a body. If you pay for another girl's food or coffee, that's a body. If you move a girl's hair out of her face, three bodies. If you let a girl borrow your clothes, that's a body. If you let another girl do your makeup, that's three bodies. If you're getting behind a girl and you put your hand in the small of her back, that's a body. Buy another girl a drink, that's a body. If I'm talking about how a girl really annoys me or I might not like her and you defend her, that's a body. If you take another girl on your boat that's not like your friend's girlfriend, that's a body. If you let another girl drive your car, that's two bodies. If you give a girl a ride home after a night out because she was out and you were sober at home, that's a body. If you tickle another girl, three bodies. If you help another girl put jewelry on, that's a body.
Oh my gosh, it's 46. Da, da, da. It's 1020 from 1210 WPHT. I'm Walter Sterling. And I get to be with you every single night because I'm stupid. They said, well, if you're going to do it every night, are you still going to do your Sunday show? And I said, yes. Yes, I'm stupid. I'm going to still do the Sunday show. I'm debating what to do now. What should we do now? According to this email I just got, we're very big in prisons. And I've noticed that the ratings go up and down depending on how many prisoner emails and letters I get. Now, I'm confused because I didn't think that prisoners were allowed to just send emails. I don't know how they do that. Usually when I get emails from prisoners, it says something like, this is an email from an official source, an official place. You don't have to accept this from a prisoner if you don't want to. But I'm thrilled that people who have limited entertainment options choose Sterling every damn night. It is, in fact, an honor for me because I happen to believe in something. I don't believe most convictions are correct. I see how it's done. I see how you do better if you're rich sometimes, maybe. It is not a perfect system. And I believe that the sentences are particularly capricious. And I have actually done parole hearings. I've looked up people who I believed were screwed. And I've gone to their parole hearings and I've spoken on their behalf. And I'm happy to do that because that's part of the system. It's 10:22 and we could go to Motown Monday. I love that song. I love that song. That was in one of the worst, best movies ever made. You know those movies that are, in fact, pretty horrible, but you love them anyway? That was called a movie that was called The In Crowd. And that featured, that was a story about the dance show in Philadelphia that replaced locally Dick Clark's show when he went to Hollywood. There was a show that filled the vacuum. There was another local dance show in Philadelphia that came on after Dick Clark went to Hollywood. And that's what The In Crowd is about.
Just wanted to wish the LGBTQ plus community a happy Pride Month. Enjoy, but don't forget to thank a straight person for your existence.
I have to go to a family reunion in July. Now, I'm sharing this with you because maybe you have some way either to get out of it or to deal with it. My number is 855-839-1210. It is a live radio show. There's Andrew sitting there wondering, is this the right career for me? I've been at this 10 days, and I don't think Walter likes me, and I'm not getting the sort of feedback that I wanted. Give him something to do. He'll answer the phone first. And by the way, that isn't to screen you. That's just because of the mechanics of the phone system, which I think is steam-driven. I think we got a steam-driven phone system. It's got a dial on it, right? 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Coming up in July, I have to go to a family reunion. It's my wife's family. My family had the good sense to never have family reunions. And they were afraid of the RICO Act. This was a Jersey family. This is not a Jersey family. These people are from Appalachia, as best I can tell. And whenever I say to them, what do? The answers are always vague. And how did you get here? They don't really remember. How are you going to be getting home? Nobody really remembers. But the worst thing that could happen to me, and this will make me sound grandiose. Of course I'm grandiose. Only grandiose people are on the radio. I don't want them to ask me what I do. And I don't want them to ask me what I talk about when I find out what I do, because I always have to quickly say, I don't talk about politics. And then, you know, they sort of look around. What do you talk about there, Walter? What are you talking about? I talk about our day. I talk about the water in the basement. The fact that today in the second floor bathroom, mysteriously, water starts spitting out of the bottom of the toilet. Not over the top. We know what that's about. No, it's just randomly coming out of the base of the toilet. And that's what I talk about, because I think that's a lot bigger deal than anything that could happen in Congress today. That's what I talk about. What you and I would talk about if for lunch or a cup of coffee, that's what I try to talk about. I know it's very mysterious. It's very mysterious. But I've got to go to this family reunion. Now, the first time that we had one of these big family reunions with her side of the family. You know what I'm talking about. With her side of the family, coordinated by her mother. Oh, God. As I'm thinking about it now, I'm thinking about where can I light a candle? We go to a public forest. There's a public forest that has cabins and fire pits. And, of course, they're cabins without air conditioning or heat. And therefore, they're very cheap. So all these people from Appalachia can afford it. Hey, these are really nice cabins. No, they're not really nice cabins. It's an oxymoron. These were nice cabins when I was in Boy Scouts. And even the ones in Boy Scouts were a little better. Now we're in these wooden cabins in the middle of nowhere with bear tracking us down and hunters and Friday the 13th people. And no air conditioning. And I'm telling you, there are very few things that I must have in life to be happy and secure and safe and asleep. And one of them is air conditioning. I cannot sleep without an air conditioner. My poor brother had asthma, and his doctor prescribed an air conditioner, and his room was next to mine. I grew up listening to the white noise of an air conditioner. I have to have that damn thing on. And I was always a little jealous of the fact that, you know, his would go on in July, and I'd be sitting there with a big hall fan. Down the hall would be a big hall, giant hall fan that if I got too near it, it would suck me in and kill me. That was my childhood. My brother had an air conditioner. He was living at a Four Seasons in the next room. I'm afraid to walk down the stairs because I don't want to be sucked in by the giant New Jersey two guys hall fan. Corvettes. Yes. Well, now I'm in this cabin, which has no air conditioning, no fans, and just the annoying noise of crickets and giant bear and snakes. Snakes are about to come in, and I'm miserable. I am so miserable. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep well. Then everybody wakes up, and, oh, they're all happy to see. So what have you been doing the last 22 years? What have you been doing? I don't care what. That's the thing. I don't care what any of them have been doing. I don't care what any of them have to say. I could care less. I don't care what any of them have to say.
This is how to survive a family reunion, being a Nosawo kid. Remember the words. ¿Cómo estás? They will carry you throughout the entire reunion because you will be meeting dozens of people who you've never met or seen before in your life. Pero they all have one thing in common, your mom's Facebook page. So when your tía or tío walks in, you're going to look them dead in the eyes and say, hola tía, ¿cómo estás? Followed by a bunch of besos. One of two situations can occur.
Ay, mijita, mira qué grande que estás. Yo recuerdo cuando estabas muy chiquita.
In most of these cases, they're just complimenting you. So all you have to say, gracias. Pero if this happens,
estoy muy bien, ¿y tú qué estás haciendo ahora?
They asked you a question, but you don't know what they said, but what do you do?
How do I get out of this? 855-839-1210. That's my phone number. It's live at 1210 WPHT, 855-839-1210. We are the Mecca of Market Street, the exact location where the city of Philadelphia decides to do the most toes. Right here on Market Street. All right, 855-839-1210. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night. Inspired by Captain Kangaroo.
You know, I'm kind of glad that Mr. Moose isn't here right now.
Oh, my gosh. Look at this. It's 1035 from WPHT in Philadelphia. How lucky are we? And I am celebrating Pride Month. We're celebrating Pride Month as best we can in our limited ways. Was that big enough for you? That flag, was that big enough for you? I hope so. Now, there was something here I wanted to play for you. It's always a challenge for me to find the things that I want to play for you. Do. Give me a second. We'll get it.
Sorry. What I'm saying?
What? No, no, God, no. Please close your legs up.
Come look, I heard reindeer. Hear those sleigh bells, kids? They're coming for you.
These are all the Nick stars of 2007. Yeah.
Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, tingling, too.
Cheeks are nice and rosy and comfy, cozy all we are. Oh, we're snuggled up together like two birds of a feather would be. Let's take that road before us and sing a chorus or two. Come on, it's lovely where the forest lay right together with you.
What? No, no, God, no. Please close your legs up.
Sorry. What I'm saying?
What? No, no, God, no. Please close your legs up.
We're guys. We keep a little dirt under my pillow for the birdman. In case he comes to town.
What?
Keep a little dirt under my pillow for the birdman. So he.
I have no content to post today, so I thought I would say, hey, say it back.
Those were two examples of current highly watched content on TikTok. Would you please explain to me exactly what the problem is here? What is the problem with TikTok? What am I missing? All right, it's Pride Month in Philadelphia. We have the largest flag in the world. Size does matter. We have the largest flag in the world. I would like to ask you, share with you, and I've tried to do this for 10 years. Let me share with you the hell of being a talk show host. You come up with a subject that you think you'll want to talk about, that you and I can talk about, that's fun and lighthearted and not about politics. And then it never works. I don't know why. I believe that you had a celebrity gay crush. You had a celebrity same-sex crush. Maybe you do now. And you don't talk about it. You don't share it with other people. But when you see the picture of that person in the newspaper or in a magazine or on Entertainment Tonight, you pause a second and you watch. And you have a celebrity gay crush. In the 70s, long before you were born, the big celebrity gay crush for men and the big celebrity gay crush for guys was David Cassidy. No, really. Or his brother, Sean. Now, I don't know who it would be, but I'd be very curious, who is your celebrity gay crush? The beauty of this is it's anonymous. It's a polite and proper way for you to celebrate Pride Month. It's a great way for you to celebrate Pride Month. Many, many young women had a major celebrity gay crush on Christy McNichol.
Her coming out in 2012, both in her life and the more broad context of LGBTQ+, would represent acceptance. By sharing her personal stories, she had contributed to the visibility and representation of LGBTQ+ individuals, breaking down barriers and stereotypes. Her honesty revealed a long-term relationship and a powerful message of love, acceptance, and pride.
Kate Martin on the Las Vegas Aces, the WNBA team. Kate Martin, blonde, long blonde hair, 6 feet tall, major crush for many women. And she happens to be gay, which works. And she has a job. I think it's very important that once you cross the barrier of being 19 and you've entered adulthood, that whoever your crush is should also have a job. Seems like a fair goal. Who is your celebrity gay crush? It could be when you were young, or it could be today. But it's very interesting to hear who, you know, you're married, you might be a member of the opposite sex, you might have kids, that's fine. But I'll bet you have a celebrity gay crush that every time you see them, you go, whoa, who's that? What's that? That's really interesting. That's really interesting. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Alexandra Daddario. Young ladies, do you have a celebrity gay crush on Alexandra Daddario? I love when Anna Kendrick did a nude scene in one of the Pitch Perfect movies with Brittany Snow. And she was on some interview show and she was asked, well, I understand that was a very uncomfortable day for you to be naked in the shower with Brittany Snow. And her answer was great. Her answer was, no, that was the best day of my life.
Ooh, enjoy being a guy, having a girl like me.
And we've blessedly entered a time where being, quote, anti-gay or anti-gay marriage is not okay. It's not acceptable. You will be supportive. And what I've learned in my conversations with parents, grandparents, grandparents, is that there is a definite, I don't know what the problem is there. What is the problem there, Greg Stocker? What is that problem? There's a definite problem in demography that you may find. What's that? Oh, yeah, it's 855-839-1210. You may find that your parents or your grandparents intellectually say, yes, we're supportive of gay marriages, we think it's great. But then when you get a scotch in them and they really start talking about it, you'll hear terrible things. Like you'll hear your grandparents or your parents saying, well, you know, it devalues my marriage. What do you mean? What? How does it devalue your marriage? If two people who are in love want to get married, how does that impact your marriage? Or then you get really scary and you'll hear older people talk about how the practices of gay couples are repulsive to them, are dangerous, are not sanitary. And they'll go there. And that's all very sad. That's all very sad because love just is. My number is 855-839-1210. Who's your celebrity crush? Your celebrity gay crush. 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. It's 1045 in Philadelphia from 1210 WPHT.
Sterling Every Night, inspired by Frank Zappa.
Are there any rock lyrics, Mr. Zappa, that you have heard in the past couple of years that you wouldn't want your children listening to?
We are the world.
I don't hear the strippers on the loose. Now, how does something like that happen at 1050 on WPHT, a top 10 market radio station with 50,000 watts? How do we have a jingle without an actual feature? These are the many puzzles for me. It's Pride Month, and every year I try to do a call me up and let's talk about it Pride topic. And I'm very lucky. I've done this show for 10 years, and whenever I suggest something that you and I could talk about, you call, and we have great conversations, especially if I ask for advice. But in 10 years, never once have I introduced a pride topic, a gay topic, and anybody call. So the topic tonight, and I'll give it 8 minutes, the topic tonight is, who is your gay celebrity crush? There's probably somebody who you see or hear, and you immediately go, oh my gosh, they're so attractive. That doesn't mean you want to do anything with them. It doesn't mean you want to go to bed with them. It just means you really like to look at them. I feel that way about, are you ready? Ready? My gay celebrity crush is Taylor Hansen of the band, the Umbop band, the lead singer. Taylor Hansen is a raging heterosexual with 7 children, but nevertheless, a very handsome young man. And I'm happy to admit that. I feel no shame. This is just how it works. There's almost nothing, according to Kinsey, where a person is 100% straight or 100% gay. There's a middle there. And it's situational, it's time of year, 1,000 different factors can influence somebody to suddenly have a crush on a person of the same sex or to go further. And I think it, does it matter what I think? It doesn't matter, but I think it's totally fine. My number is 855-839-1210. Who is your celebrity gay crush? 855-839-1210 from 1210 WPHT. And it's interesting because I believe that everybody at some point in their life has a gay crush on somebody famous. And it's built that way. Those television shows and the movies are designed to make the people in them as attractive as possible, and where you might not be attracted to them if you saw them on the street. My gosh, you see them on the screen and you're attracted to them. And that's more than okay. 855-839-1210 from WPHT. Now, I loved this.
So what's your take?
White culture is being bad at cooking.
100% agree.
Here's how you know white people aren't good at cooking. America has celebrity chefs. Yeah, that's how rare it is to find a white person that can cook. If they can, they get a TV show.
If you can make one good meal, you're on Netflix.
Like, all of white culture is about being bad at cooking. Like, there are TV shows about it. Like, The Worst Chefs in America.
That's a show?
It's a show by white people featuring white people for white people to watch to feel better about themselves.
What's your favorite white meal?
I like a steak.
That's not a white meal. That's an Italian meal.
That's an Italian meal?
You think steak is for white people?
I think steak is for white people.
I think oysters are for white people.
Just because you slurp? Slurping, that's a white way to eat.
White people don't have slurping food.
You know why? Because they can't cook. That's my point.
Little known fact, I was white until about 6 months ago on the census.
Congratulations.
Now I'm not.
You got the promotion and now you can't cook. I wouldn't get a meal from you.
What else?
White people make movies about how bad they're cooking. Like the movie Ratatouille. Think about the plot of that movie. A rat cooks better than all of France. That's the entire plot of that movie.
The rat is definitely white, too.
But here's why I think white people are bad at cooking. And that's how they are able to take over the world.
Because right? they have a lot of time on their hands?
You know who could cook historically? Asian women. And you know what Asian men did? They stayed at home with their wives, eating their home cooking. Right? White women can't cook. You know what white men did? They got on boats and died of scurvy looking for spices.
That's why every white guy has an Asian girlfriend.
White men would love to f*** white women.
They do.
But you know what they do? They date Asians.
Because they want the food.
Because they want the meal.
You know what? I'm in.
All right.
Great.
855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. You and I are sharing who our gay celebrity crush is. This is anonymous. Nobody has to know. Nobody's going to know. But it's time to fess up. You only have to do it once a year during Pride Month. During Pride Month, that's it. What's the name of that first big NBC gay show? What was that show? How dare I not know? That changed a lot. That changed a lot of culture. That was a good thing. But I'll tell you this, and this is a radio fact. New York, Boston, Philadelphia, Washington, you get 50 miles west of here, and the acceptance and the embrace of the gay community barely exists. The prejudice, the hatred, the fear of the gay community 50 miles west of here is profound and tragic and obviously unnecessary. Because it's like, you want to do stuff? Don't bother me. I don't need to know about it. I don't need to know. It's really too bad. But I believe that in the spirit of integration into society, acceptance and culture, I happen to believe that the parades are a mistake. The parades don't help. That your 12-year-old's with you on the sidewalk and they see a gay parade and they see a bunch of 400-pound, 45-year-old guys walking by drunk, high, in strange makeup, how does that help? There's so many better ways to promote gay causes and to promote acceptance into society and equal rights and equal laws. There's so many better ways. In my opinion, parades don't help. And I have believed that ever since I saw my first gay parade, which was in New York City decades ago. And I'm like, this scares the hell out of me. And I couldn't bring a kid to this just because it would overwhelm them and scare them. And the last thing I want my kids to have as a first impression is fear of seeing really odd people in muumuus, 400 pounds, 45 years old, weird makeup. No, there are better ways to do it. Parades don't help. My number is 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. This is a big-time Philadelphia radio show, and I'm Walter M. Sterling, and you and I can stay in touch. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. The address is WalterMSterling@gmail.com. Every email gets answered. Sterling every night.
The shame of Philadelphia radio, the time filler on WPHT, yes, live Sterling every damn night.
I see these salaries that our mayor is paying her cabinet, and I have a very different point of view. But first, here's the view of the weather from Dr. Dave Iser. It's 11:07 from 1210 WPHT in Philadelphia. It's local live radio. This is Greg Stocker and David Yadgaros' vision for what should happen every night. We got to get some strippers in here, I'm telling you. That's what it's going to take. Listen, this Mayor Parker, she's paying people a lot of money. I'm sure Dom Giordano and Rich Scioli screamed about this. but I have a different point of view. Let's see. The police commissioner earns $340,000 a year, and it's nearly $100,000 more a year than the head of the New York Police Department. And the fire commissioner, who now oversees city operations, earns $310,000 a year. And the head of the airport, the Philadelphia CEO of the Philadelphia Airport, Atif Saeed, earns $335,000 a year. It's a 3% increase over last year. Here's what I feel about the fire commissioner and the police commissioner. They're underpaid. There was a time, you won't believe what I'm about to tell you. There was an article in Fortune magazine that I saw, I don't know where the heck it was. And the headline of it was, "The Good Life Starts at $25,000 a Year." And it was in the late 60s. And there were very few people earning $25,000 a year. But the ones who did, they had a boat, a second house. Their kids were in college or private school. They lived in the best neighborhood. $25,000 a year was the $2 million of the day. And in 1978, the highest paid CEO in America, I'm going to tell you this, you're not going to believe it. The highest paid CEO in America in 1977, 78, was being paid $350,000 a year. That was the chairman of American Home Products, the people who make Chef Boyardee and Echo Cookware and one of the aspirins, Whitehall Labs. Now, the CEO pay is insane. And $100,000 a year today, because you haven't looked for a job in a while, $100,000 a year today, that's minimum wage for an executive or sort of an executive or somebody with a college degree or something. But that's the minimum wage. $100,000 a year is what you got. And, you know, if you look at the poverty line charts, you know, what is it that establishes poverty in Philadelphia? Well, it's about $60,000. You earn less than $60,000, you're in poverty. You can get food stamps and Medicaid. $350,000 a year for the police commissioner of Philadelphia, a city that is all crime all the time. Or the fire department, I believe one of the worst things that ever happened to municipal unions is in too many cities, the fire department, the sanitation department, and the police department, they all earn the same money. That's crazy talk. Nobody should earn more than the policemen and the firemen, and then the school teachers. Those are the people who should earn the most money. I don't care what the mayor gets. Doesn't matter. I don't care what the president gets paid. Doesn't matter. Anybody who throws themselves in front of a bullet or a house on fire for me, start them at $1 million. They should start at $1 million. And the city has it. Well, you just saw earlier today that SEPTA has decided that for repairing the trains, they need to increase the parking lots and the parking garages, the fees, by about $1 or $2 a day. And that is a slush fund. That's not going anywhere near those trains. If they wanted to repair the trains, they'd start at a $10 rate increase. And they'd say, and here's what we're going to do specifically. Boom, boom, boom. Not a, oh, well, you know, those trains could use improvement. That's not the quote you want. Or better, that they're going to build more parking spaces. Because the primary reason most people in the suburbs decide not to take a train is they can't park their car. There's no place to park the car. It is the number of parking slots that determine how many people are going to take a train. And all of that was built in the 40s and 50s when mom drove dad to the station and dropped him off. They didn't need a parking spot. But in 1972 and 73, thanks to your President Nixon, it became necessary because of the wage price freeze. It became necessary for mom to go to work. She had to go to work. And then there was a political push for mom to go to work. You had a political push and an economic need, and mom went to work. And all of a sudden, instead of needing one parking space or a drop-off, now you need two per family so they can take the train. If they're not on the same schedule, they have to take two different cars. The criticism about Mayor Parker's salaries to her cabinet, well, the only criticism I have is, how does she unilaterally decide that? She doesn't have to get anyone to approve that besides the people who are getting the money. The people in the cabinet get to approve that they get money. That's not a good system. That sounds like a government system. But I think the minimum should be $1 million for the fire chief and $1 million for the police chief. And then you could have the best brains in the world. And we deserve the best brains in the world because, like many other cities, this is way too dangerous. When you and I, 10 years ago, could walk in Center City and not blink and not have to look the other way, we could just walk in Center City. We could walk in Center City at midnight. Now we have to do the path. We have to do the puzzle. And the puzzle is, I can't walk down that street. That's going to be too dangerous. And all of a sudden, I have to do this strange maze of safety to get to where I'm going in Center City safely. This strange maze. Oh, I'll go down this street. I'll go up this street. I'll go over here to avoid this homeless encampment, these drug addicts, these kooks, this construction. Pay the police chief and pay the fire chief whatever you possibly can. And I say they both should start at $1 million. That's what I think. Coming up, we have Dave Scott, who has no problems, but I've got a lot of questions all of a sudden to ask him about the moon landing. That's in just seconds at 11:14. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night. Inspired by Frank Rizzo.
I was a cop all my life, and I know a lush when I see one, and you're a lush.
Sterling every night. Lost in space, mission control, Dave Scott. Dave Scott.
Dave Scott, welcome to Sterling Every Night. Our Canadian friend, our up north friend, our Canuck friend, welcome, Mr. Scott. There's a lot of talk, and it never seems to go away. It seems to be getting worse that we did, in fact, not go to the moon. And the arguments for us not going to the moon, the one that I like best, is that it doesn't seem that it's possible for us to go to the moon again. And I had on many times a great guest like you, named Stephanie Osborne. And Stephanie Osborne was a payload expert for the space shuttle. She worked for NASA. She was a high-ranking official at NASA. She determined what could go in the shuttle, how much, what was necessary, all that. And I asked her two things that I thought were important because I asked them every time. I said to her, why haven't we gone back to the moon? And she said, what I was surprised to learn was that our trip to the moon was absolutely not a scientific mission. Our trip to the moon was a political mission to beat the Russians. And after that, after we did that, we had no interest in continuing that. There was no plan to continue it. And then she said this, and I always found this odd. She said, besides, scientists took the plans home. They took a lot of the information needed to do it. They took it home. It's in people's basements, in their files in the basement. We sold off the rockets. We sold off the launching pads. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, and then I kept thinking about what? The plans for how we got to the moon, the most classified information we've got is sitting in people's basements in Newtown. I'm like, what? What do you think, Dave Scott?
Well, first off, I feel we did go to the moon. I'm not one of the conspiracy theorists who believes that we didn't. But the interesting part about it was the Apollo program, the entire capsule that took the astronauts up there, had less technology than what we carry in our smartphones on a daily basis, which I find amazing at that because I'm not a real techie guy, but that one's already stuck with me. I do believe the same as you, that this was a political mission to get to the moon after the Russians were successful in first launching Sputnik. And, you know, but I also believe something different, Walt. And what would this segment be without me being bringing something a little bit different?
God bless you.
What if the possibility? What if the possibility that we, when we went to the moon, we were told not to come back? Think about that. If you go and research the astronauts that went to the moon, from William Cooper to Buzz Aldrin and many others, there are a bunch of secret codes that were said about, yes, NASA, there is a Santa Claus. Or the rumored legend of Neil Armstrong saying they are here, they are on the hill, and they are watching us. That has always stuck with me. Plus, if you want to go real conspiratorial, Walt, after the Apollo missions ended, there were three secret missions because they found a rocket on the moon that contained an alien, which they nicknamed the Mona Lisa, inside.
Three additional missions, which could have been picked up by many radio sets, many telescopes. Any hard evidence of this?
Well, there is one controversial YouTube video, and I realize, people, before you jump down my throat, I do know you can't trust anything on YouTube, for the most part. However, there has been one controversial video on there showing, I believe it's like Apollo 21 rocket or Apollo 20, where they go up in space, they land on the moon near a rocket or a spaceship that seems to have crashed into the moon. They open it up, they see the body of a lady, which they nicknamed the Mona Lisa, a humanoid lady with three eyes, long butterfly-type eyelashes. Very interesting.
Did we bring her back?
Apparently we brought pieces of her back.
Got it. Now, I believe all of that, Dave. The other thing, Dave Scott, you'll appreciate this. I asked Stephanie Osborne, the NASA shuttle payload expert. I asked her a question that I'm like, how come no one's ever asked this question of anybody from NASA? Which is this. I said, Stephanie, has there been sex in space?
Of course.
And she said, what you just said, she said, yes, there has been sex in space. I said, how do we know? And why do we think that? She said, well, remember, there was a married couple on the space shuttle. And there's one part of the space shuttle where there's no mic and no camera. And she believes it happened there. So she believes there's been sex in space.
See, if I was up in space with my wife on the International Space Station, you have to go for it. You know, that's the 300-mile club. You know, 300-mile high club. You have to go for it, Walt.
Honey, I did what you asked me to do. I have flown you to the moon.
And you know what the other part about it is? Let me just comment here. Most astronauts only get one shot at going into space. One. Okay, all that training for one shot at the moon or the International Space Station. If my wife is going up with me, they can't come get me. They can't cancel my flight. I'm already there for 6 months or 4 months or a year. I'm going for it, Walt.
On the Challenger mission, now there's much speculation and conversation about, were the astronauts in the Challenger alive when it exploded? And experts have said they may have been alive when it exploded, and they may have been alive when it fell to Earth, but when it hit the ocean, there's no way they could have survived that, the impact in the ocean. And then the next question is, where are the bodies, Dave Scott?
Oh, goodness. We're getting real tinfoil here. You know, there is actually a conspiracy group out there, Walt, that actually believes that they survived. And
yes,
they have dug up photos of people who look very much like the astronauts would today. And it is, I hate to say this because, I, there are certain things that to me are taboo, like that Challenger mission. But I will say this, it's very eerie, the photos that they were able to dig up.
I saw some of those photos in things like The Enquirer or The Star or some British tabloids. And yes, it's very easy to look at those and say they look very similar, but it's also very easy to manipulate photos these days if you're in first grade. So I don't buy any of those photos. I don't believe those poor people are alive. I think it's one of the great tragedies of our time. I agree with you.
Absolutely.
But I also, over time, over 50 years, not all of the stories about us going to the moon add up. The other thing that's weird is that we went back to the moon many times. There were many Apollo missions after the first one. We went back to the moon more than once. But I do believe that we saw something that kept us away for 50 years. I absolutely believe that. Dave Scott, do you have any summary information?
Well, the one thing I would say about that is, you know, the flat earthers, the people who don't believe that we went to the moon and think it's just a Stanley Kubrick film, you know, there are some compelling stories to believe that. But I do think that when you see the astronauts, you talk to the astronauts, I do believe there was something more of an extraterrestrial presence up there that has kept us off the moon. Or we have a secret space program where we already have a base up there. We're going to have to get into that next time, Walt.
We'll do that next time. I believe it's very interesting, always amazed, that Neil Armstrong was silent about the moon mission pretty much for the rest of his life. He didn't take Q&A. He didn't make speeches. He could have been a very rich man doing the speaker circuit. He didn't. And I believe he didn't because there would be questions. If he gets up there and gives a speech, the next thing you're supposed to do is take questions from the audience. I think that scared him to death. I don't think that man wanted to answer any questions because he always appeared to be a man of great integrity, and he would have had to stand up there and lie.
Well, I mean, look at Buzz Aldrin. I mean, punching a guy out who said that he didn't want to, that they didn't go to the moon. I mean, it's
but
very,
the great thing
very
about,
suspicious.
Yeah, you're right. But the great thing about Buzz is that he's a kook. And everything he does can be put in the context of, I mean, he was on Dancing with the Stars, for God's sakes. Why would an astronaut do that, Dave Scott? All right, we'll talk tomorrow night. You're the best, Dave. Tell us how to get in touch with you. Tell us your website.
SpacedOutRadio.com on the website and YouTube Spaced Out Radio.
SpacedOutRadio.com. Dave Scott is one of the great broadcasters of North America. He's safely in Canada. He can't be viciously assaulted verbally in the United States. He stays in Canada, which is probably the safest. And also, the thing about Canadian broadcasters that I found out later in life was that they hire a lot of people who are American consultants to let them know whether or not their stations sound good, because the American consultant will always conclude with this: gee, your station sounds better than any in the States. Check, please. That's what they do. This is Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night, inspired by Judge Judy.
What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?
Stress on the loose, we're live.
Generally, when you go to Yelp to find a great gentleman's club, you usually get a good feeling about whether the place is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to go enjoy some jiggling and dancing, or whether it's bad. The Office Gentleman's Club has a 2.8 out of 5 average, and the reviews are all either 5-star or 1-star. It's crazy. Well, at 2 o'clock Saturday at the Office Gentlemen's Club near West Van Dorn and South Folsom Street in beautiful, beautiful Lincoln, Nebraska. Well, apparently a little bit of a kerfuffle at closing time. This club is open every, Sunday they have cutback hours for church. Sunday they're open 7 to 2, 7P to 2A, and the rest of the week 3P to 2A. Well, the club is closed. Argument in the parking lot. Shooting goes on. Second suspect arrested. Christopher Z. Johnson, 32, of Lincoln, picked up on suspicion of 2 counts of first-degree murder and 2 counts of using a firearm to commit a felony. Mr. Johnson went on the run all the way to Omaha, so, I don't know, 45 minutes away. Booze, frauds, and testosterone are 3 things that rarely do well together, especially after midnight. My rule, enjoy your time.
Enjoy the lovely ladies in the champagne room. Don't get into an argument with some dopes, because you never know who's going to pull out a gat and start pulling the trigger. Rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat-tat with the gat. Christopher Z. Johnson in custody. We remember Carlos Silva and Terrell Jones. Their memory will be a blessing. From the champagne room, this is Vilo Hool. Sterling at night.
1137 from 1210 WPHT, Market Street, Philadelphia. It's our night. This is our time. Because from now till 6 in the morning, it's just us, the people who don't fit in. Them, you know who they are, HR, they're all asleep. They believe in this wacky new theory called 5 a.m., the 5 a.m. club. Get up at 5 a.m. Because even though you're not a farmer, it's best if you behave like a farmer and drink organic milk and local cows. I don't care where the cows live. Do you really care where the cows live? Locally sourced milk. I don't care where the milk comes from. I don't care if the cows are nearby. In fact, I'd prefer if the cows are very far away. But this whole insane theory about, yes, get up at 5 a.m. and see how your life changes. I'll tell you how my life would change if I got up at 5 a.m. every day. I would be dead tired by 10:15, and I'd be nodding off by 11. And by noon, I'd be dragging home and taking a very long nap. The arrogance of people who say, you should get up early, has always been amazing to me. Everybody should get in early. There's some whack job equation between getting to work early and being better at your job than anybody else. Insane. And it's always from the sales department. People in content, people who make stuff, they never say you should get in earlier. They say nothing. Like, get it done. Do your best. People in sales, you got to get in at 5 a.m. The earliest person gets in, they have the most. It's nonsense. And the theory that, oh, and then they're selling to retailers or they're selling their product, that doesn't mean everybody they're selling to is going to get up at 5 a.m. either. It's crazy talk. That's crazy talk. The trick in corporate life, the key, isn't to get in early. It's to get in 5 minutes before your boss. That's early. Whenever your boss gets in, you get in 5 minutes before your boss. And when your boss leaves, you leave 5 minutes after your boss leaves. If you're not visible to your boss because of the factory floor, Henry Ford mentality, if your boss can't see you, you don't exist. You're not working. If your boss can't see you, you're not working. And that's why that is the insane reason why so many companies are saying, well, okay, you're doing really good work at home. Why don't you waste a 2-hour commute each way and $150 on gas each month and come in anyway? What? I'm doing better work at home. And I'm not distracted by Marge and her bad deodorant and her bad perfume. And I'm not distracted by Diane making me look at pictures of her kids and selling me Girl Scout cookies in March that I don't want because of my diabetes. All of those things are avoided when you and I can just work at home. I do my show either from 2400 Market Street, which I love because the Odyssey facility is incredible, or I do it from my laundry room. And it's just fine in my laundry room. Either way. But in the laundry room, I have fewer distractions, believe it or not. When I go to a 2400 Market, which I love to do, the fact is that I have a lot of distractions, mostly having to do with the vending machines. The best and worst thing about Odyssey in Philadelphia, they have the best vending machines I've ever seen. They have spectacular vending. They have everything in those vending machines. They're maintained. They're clean. That kitchen area is immaculate. David Field, you're a brilliant guy. You really should return my emails. You'd be stunned at what a great lunch, David Field, you and I could have, the CEO of Odyssey. He'd be amazed at how much fun he would have talking to me. Because I come from that time when corporate life was determined how good you were at lunch. I don't take credit for much. No, really. I'm spectacular at lunch. I know how to do lunch. I know when to do the story, when to start the story. I know what to order. By the way, if you're at a corporate lunch, if you're at an expense account lunch, here's what you do. You order the cheapest thing on that menu and no alcohol. You order the cheapest thing on that menu, or you order exactly what your host is ordering and nothing else. None of that lobster. That lobster's not for you. You go on a date for the lobster. You don't go on a date with your boss for the lobster. Have I made myself clear? All right, there's some important things I have to go over with you. You ready? You have notes? Ready to take notes? I have an email address. I answer every email. It's waltermsterling@gmail.com. waltermsterling@gmail.com. One day David Field will give me an Odyssey email address. That doesn't seem to be happening right now, but I'm way ahead of Gary Arnell. I have a parking pass, and I have a building pass. Arnell doesn't have either. Makes no sense. He's been here 42 years. This is Gary Arnell's 42nd year. The other thing is Father's Day is coming up. I'm going to share with you exactly what he wants for Father's Day. It's the cheapest gift you could give him and the most appreciative. On Mother's Day, they do this weird thing where dad takes care of the kids to give mom a break. Break from what? I don't know. On Father's Day, they say, Susie and Willard are going to be with you all day. You get to spend quality time with the kids. What? My Father's Day gift is to take care of the kids? How does that work exactly? The best gift you can give dad is the following. You say, George, the kids and I were going out for the whole day. We won't be back till 10 at night. The whole day. You do whatever you want. That's the gift. For George to be allowed to stay in his Ben Salem home in the Newtown estate, he's going to put the air conditioning at 50 degrees. He's going to pull down all the blinds for no reason. It's just instinctive, like from when he was in college or high school. His instinct is he's going to pull down all the blinds. Put the temperature at 50. He's going to get out snacks. In my case, it'll be Diet Cherry 7-Up. Diet Cherry 7-Up is the greatest food ever made. Isn't that right, Neil? It's spectacular. And then he's going to watch the History Channel. He's not going to watch sports. He's not going to watch the WNBA. He's not going to watch sports. He's going to watch the History Channel. And he's going to hope that the Nazi UFO special is on. The Nazi Bell, the story of the Nazi Bell, where the Nazis built a time capsule that disappeared. And did one of the Nazi scientists get in it at the end of the war and take it to another time and place? Did that happen? Ancient alien astronauts say yes. That's what he's going to do. Maybe he'll order in a pizza or a Chinese. Maybe he'll go crazy and do that. But that's what dad really wants to do. He wants to be left alone for a day. He doesn't want to take care of the kids. Maybe if he's insane, he wants to play golf. But that to me is just a lot of work. What dad really wants is to be left alone in the house for the day. Do that. And you will send me thank you emails. I have a Facebook page. It's Walter Sterling, Sterling, Walter Sterling. I post interesting pictures. I used to have massive traffic on that Facebook page, and then I think the Facebook algorithm ate me and decided that the other kids can't play with me. It's really interesting. I went from like 100 and 150 likes or comments on every post to two. How did that happen? That can only be the evils of an algorithm. And then, Dad, I want to take a small group of fathers to lunch at the Chinese place near the post office. We'll go to lunch. And here's the thing. When dads go to lunch, when men go to lunch, we really don't want to talk. We want essential information, and that's it. We'll go to lunch, about six, eight of us. I'll buy. And you get to ask one question of either each other or me, and that's it. Then we eat in silence. That's our gift to each other as fathers. I'm Walter M. Sterling. It's 11:47, and this is Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Night, inspired by Jumo on TikTok.
Let's make a pizza.
Sterling Every Night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the owl and dawn.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and here's an excerpt for you from my short story collection, Disintegration, The Prequels. Maida turned around and led Callum to the staircase at the back of the room. Her heart fluttered in her chest as she ascended the steps. Were we really doing this? She chose not to turn on the lights once they were safely inside her bedroom. As soon as the door clicked shut, Callum captured her with one arm around her waist. Their lips met in the darkness, and she ran her hands along the crisp fabric of his shirt. His fervent kiss filled her with unpredicted longing, a hunger she needed to satiate. Without breaking their contact, he backed toward the bed. They sat down, and he dragged his lips toward her neck, skimming along her delicate skin. "I've been dreaming of this since I first met you," he said near her ear. His words were sweet, yet there was a hint of a savage growl in his voice. "I couldn't get my mind off you all week." Residual doubts lingered in her mind, their sharp barbs piercing through the arousal he incited. She barely knew this man in front of her, and she couldn't help but wonder how many other women had been on the receiving end of his subtle charm and tempting kisses. Maida pulled back and stared at him. His eyes shimmered in the pale glow of the moonlight. Beneath their genuine affection, her own desire was mirrored in the depths of his gaze. Reaching out, she trailed her fingers along the side of his face, her thumb brushing across his lower lip. Whatever his intentions were, they didn't matter. She wanted him. His hands moved to the first closure of her blouse. One by one, he unfastened the buttons with painstaking care. He pushed the lightweight garment away and traced along the upper edge of one side of her bra. It wasn't enough. He needed to feel more of him against her. Copying his movements, she unbuttoned the top of his shirt. She progressed halfway down before he nudged her hands away. With a devilish smirk, Callum pulled the shirt off over his head and let it flutter to the floor. It was soon joined by the thin white tank he had worn underneath. He wrapped his arms around her body and removed her bra. Maida's blood sizzled through her veins as their lips met again. She pushed against the firm muscles of his chest, and they toppled over, their legs dangling off the bed. Two sets of hands roamed over exposed flesh and quivering muscles. He pissed a path down her neck, his mouth gliding over her collarbone. "So beautiful," he murmured, his steamy breath skating over her skin. Her breath caught in her throat, and she clutched at his bare shoulders. The pressure of her fingertips seemed to spur him forward, and his hands abandoned her chest in favor of the waistband of her skirt. Lust clouded her mind, and they both fumbled with the zipper as she tried to wriggle out of it. Callum sat up. "What's wrong?" he asked. "Nothing," he said. "I just figured you'd be more comfortable if we, you know, went all the way on the bed." She giggled. After kicking her shoes off, she swung her legs up and scooted back so her head landed on the pillow. Clad only in her panties, she lay back and watched him shed the remainder of his clothing. He stooped to unlace his boots and set them to the side. straightening, he pushed his pants off his narrow waist and stepped out of them. In the muted light, he could make out the sprinkling of yellow gold curls adorning his chest. They led her gaze down across the well-muscled plane of his stomach. At the first sight of him, Maida's body ached with a raw emptiness needing to be filled. Every part of her yearned to leap toward him and fling herself at his tantalizing frame. She waited for him to come to her. He sat next to her on the bed. I think I better stop there, but you know there's always more. That was an excerpt from my short story collection, Disintegration, The Prequels, which you can find on Amazon, where it's available in paperback and on Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon.